Welcome to Living Your Soul's Journey with Dr. Vicki. I am so grateful to be here with you tonight. We discuss issues to help you walk your soul's pilgrimage in your own authentic way. Sharing the path with your angels and spiritual guides gives you the comfort and security of always knowing you are not alone. You are invited to visit my website at livingyoursoulsjourney.com and fill out the Freedom to Be Me journal, a place of self-discovery. The show airs every Sunday night on BBS Radio at 4 Pacific, 7 Eastern. Call in or just listen during our inspirational discussions from guests around the world and from Dr. Vicki, a counselor of law and spirituality. And now, Living Your Soul's Journey. Welcome to Living Your Soul's Journey. Our show is to help guide you and share information so you'll have freedom to live your own soul's journey with happiness and wisdom and whatever else you're supposed to have. And tonight we have someone very special who is certainly living their soul's journey in a very unique and powerful manner. William Stillman is the internationally known author of The Autism and the God Connection, along with being the author of many other books on autism and other subjects as well. William is also a psychic medium who has helped many people with his insights and information. He is called the Autism Whisperer and Psychic Visionary. Welcome this evening, Bill. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Vicki. I am delighted to be on your program, and thank you so much for the wonderful service that you are providing to me and countless other listeners.
Well, thank you so much. I want to start. I have so many questions for you, and I know there are a lot of people that may have the same question, so I just want to start out explaining what you mean by autism, because we have so much to talk about, but what is your definition of autism so that we'll know what you're basing it all on this?
Right. In my opinion and in my experience, autism is a neurological issue that creates interruptions between how the brain and body communicate with one another, and that results in neurological blips, misfires, and disconnects, such that it can preclude someone from articulating speech and demonstrating the truth of their intellect, or it can show itself in how the body is unable to coordinate what it is that the brain is communicating that it wants it to do. For example, sometimes folks may get caught in a repetitive or perseverative pattern, such as flapping hands or arms, or they may be unable to literally move forward when someone is asking them to. So in my opinion, it's a neurological issue, but the most important thing for people to recognize about autism is that it means also that the person is in there with an intellect fully intact, commensurate with their chronological age, not below it.
Okay, great. That's beautiful. Now, I have, being that I'm very much into the soul's journey, and I know that you are too, why do you feel, and this is just an issue of discussion, but why do you think the children of today, Bill, have come in with this special connection to God through this, you know, if you want to call it autism, everything has to have a label, I guess, in our world. Otherwise, people won't know what we're talking about. But yet, I know kids with autism, and they're geniuses. And, you know, and well, every child is a genius. I understand that. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, so, I'm glad you qualified that, because I don't want to polarize people with autism in a whole other extreme by suggesting that they're all God's special little angels either. And I don't presume to speak for all people on the autism spectrum, because I have certainly known people who are not in touch with their spirituality for being depressed and feeling even suicidal. But I do feel that there is a growing shift in consciousness, and I think that there are many individuals on the autism spectrum who are contributing their part to granting leave for their family members to become more open, more sensitive, and more conscious and aware of what is really, truly important. So I don't think that it's autism exclusively, but I think it's autism that is in part contributing to a greater shift.
Oh, okay. No, I like that viewpoint because I love children. I've represented children for years as an attorney, and every child, in my viewpoint, is a genius. And, you know, they're all connected to God. It's just that you wrote this beautiful book called Autism and the God Connection. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came to write on the subject of this?
Yes, I recognized that I was myself on the autism spectrum about 20 years ago, and I began to do what I am. And by that, I mean I really engaged in a coming out process, if you will.
Okay.
And I began to become accepted by members of the autism community and their family. And I was welcomed in their homes. I began doing consultations in the capacity in which I was working in state government at the time. And I began to notice some heightened sensitivities and some experiences that were common to a number of folks and their families unbeknownst to one another. And I thought that was really curious. Now, I'm in Pennsylvania, so I thought, well, if this is going on in Pennsylvania, what's going on in the rest of the country? And furthermore, what's going on in the rest of the world? And so I began to put out some feelers in those days, the early days of the internet, through message boards and chat groups.
Okay.
And I began to get feedback from people all over the world who were telling me the exact same things. And obviously, these people were not connected or did not know one another. And so we were just talking about things like being so sensitive that you have recollections of your existence prior to being here in human form, being so sensitive that you have an unusual connection to animals, being so sensitive that you have premonitions or predictions, being so sensitive that you are more likely to be predisposed to connecting with the spirit world than the average person. And so that's what I began to write about in Autism and the God Connection. I sort of put my big toe in the water, and I followed that up with two sequels. So there's a trilogy in all, and each one gets a little bit deeper into the subject matter.
Well, I must be have some autism in me because that sounds just like me. I mean, I'm like, I feel sometimes more connected to my spiritual side than I do sometimes to the world in it that we live in. So I totally understand that.
It's easy to retreat because the world hurts, you know, and it really does. It's painful. And for those of us who have heightened sensory sensitivities, it's natural to want to retreat for self-preservation purposes. And so what do you turn to when you turn inward? You end up in a perpetual state of meditation. And who else spends that kind of time in solitude? It's, you know, the nun, the monk, the yogi, the rabbi, the guru.
Right. Yeah.
Those people made a conscious choice to enter into that state of solitude to connect with a higher power. The person with autism is born into it.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. All right. So, you know, I have to share this. I took my daughter to a school. We were checking out schools in around Georgia and Tennessee. And there was a school there, Bill, that had, there's the whole story to it because it was actually built on it was a negative portal type of situation. And I don't know if everybody understands that, but it had a lot of negative energy only because of what happened in the 1800s. The school had never been really changed since then. And so there were a lot of energies there that these folks did not understand, okay? So, you know, there were children there, though, that when I met them, they had autism. Some of them had what they call Asperger's syndrome.
Yes, that's what I had.
Oh, okay. But you talk very differently. Now, the little girl that I met was charming. She was absolutely charming. And she continued to repeat the same thing over and over again, maybe for like 5 minutes, but very charming. And so I know what you're talking about that. But the school was a wonderful school. But I have to tell you, Bill, I mean, this is a different subject, but I spent a lot of time and energy clearing up the negative energies there, yeah. Because it wasn't because of the children that were there then. It was what they were built on. I mean, when my daughter went there just to visit, she almost fell asleep. The negative portal just affected her so deeply that she didn't – she was like, what's the matter with your child, Miss Bourne, mm-hmm. you know, type of thing. But,
well, I thank you for doing that because if there was negative energy or residual negative energy there, it most certainly would have been very strongly attracted to the individuals with autism because they are exquisitely – intensely, painfully sensitive, and it probably would have tried to attach to them.
Yes, and I understand that. For folks that are listening, when a person has a special uniqueness, even if they're not and they're drunk or they're on medicines or different things, sometimes the other side, poltergeist and all that, that's a different show, I understand, but it's very important to know this, can attach there. And if the person, like if a child has autism and they don't understand that and they haven't been taught about energies and how to protect themselves, you know what I'm saying, Bill?
Oh, 100%. In fact, I had to instruct them on how to protect themselves because they're so open and so innocent and so naive. They don't realize that they have any other option other than to say no.
Right,
They don't realize that's an option.
Well, you know what is so fascinating to me is because these children are so uniquely gifted to be able to have that connection that when these entities come in, and I'm going to go ahead and discuss it, and if anybody has any questions on it, call in. I can't see your typing, Doug, so if you're typing, if anybody's calling in, for some reason I'm not able to see it. I just don't see the full conversation. But anyway, what happens is these entities from the other side come in and to communicate with children, and not just children, all children, but especially those that are really connected. And they don't have discernment. They haven't been taught that, wait a minute, this entity is not of the highest angelic force of a higher plane, if you may. And I'd love your insight on that, but they don't have that discernment. So they're one of the biggest things that I've taught my daughter, Bill, is because she is extremely intuitive and extremely connected to spirit. And she came from Russia, and she has neurological issues, okay? There are neurological things that just don't hook. I mean, they don't hook up, you know, they're just not there. And yet she is so connected that it's like phenomenal. And I had to teach her because she had so many entities coming in to her when she was, especially when she was real young. And I had to teach her very young that, wait a minute, we have to use discernment here. And you can say no. If someone's bothering you from the other side, say no. If you're not of the highest light that I'm at, then please, you know, and then I had to teach her what to do. So, I mean, it's you have a great gift here to share with these children. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and it's a huge issue. And we're not just talking about children with autism. We're talking about teens and adults on the autism spectrum also who are struggling with these very issues. And, you know, I mean, I don't know how deep you want to get into it, but there's definitely...
I want to talk about it.
Yeah, there's definitely an underbelly to this whole business of being, you know, exquisitely spiritually sensitive, because if you are that wide open, you're attracting all of the loving and positive stuff and, you know, your deceased grandma who's a cheerleader for you and your angels and so on. But then you're also wide open to attracting all of the very heavy negative energies that thrive on chaos and destruction. I've absolutely participated in situations where I have counseled families around these issues. There are absolutely commonalities around all of these. In fact, on my website, I have a protocol for people who are experiencing these things and what to do about it. That's how frequently I was coming across it in my work.
I would imagine that it would be very frequent. And my viewpoint, Bill, when I do a show, I want to share the truth with folks. And so to be able to talk about autism and the God connection, you have to be able to see the whole spectrum. And I love the fact that you're willing to talk about that, because so many people don't want to look at the fact that, wait a minute, you're connected with God. Well, you know what? God is God, but there are all these other entities that are out there, and our children and teenagers and adults, because if you've never been taught as an adult, you wouldn't know. Oh, someone's talking to me. Oh, let me talk back. No, not necessarily. And, you know, I bet you teach them, how do you know that this entity, and I call them entities, we can call them angels, but are those that are without bodies? Is that fair? Does that
sure?
Sound,
whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Is how do you know that it isn't of the highest level of knowledge and of the? I don't like to necessarily just use of the light, because that can be kind of discouraging, in that I just look at the echelon of awareness, of high awareness, of high, light in that viewpoint. I want to call, Sandy's on line one. I wanted to chat with Sandy for a minute.
Before we get to the caller, can I just chime in response to that very briefly? My litmus test is this: a loving presence will only ever be a loving presence. What that means is that the presence of a loved one or a loving force that is emanating from a good place would never dare do anything that would cause anxiety, disruption, chaos, fear of any kind. That's not a loving presence, and that's how to distinguish it.
Yes.
And there are I've had to counsel a number of teenagers on the autism spectrum who are, in their language, friends with demons who are masquerading as something they're not. And they're telling these kids, listen, I'm the only friend you've got. I'm the only one who really understands you, such that they develop this camaraderie, and then the destruction starts.
Yes, I totally understand. I went through it with my daughter. I totally 100% understand you, because she would say, this person came in, and she would start to tell me, Bill, what this entity said. And I knew immediately, because I've had years of energy work, advanced. I mean, I don't like to use the word advanced, but you can't really do energy work unless you go on all spectrums of everything. You have to be able to look at everything. And she's had quite a learning experience because of that, because she was so open to tell me.
Yeah. And as did I when I was her age. I mean, I went through some really ugly stuff as a kid, but I'm glad for it now, because I use it to my advantage in my work.
Right. Well, that's beautiful. Did you want to comment before we take Sandy? Is there anything else you
want
to say?
No. Okay, I just wanted to get that piece in about how to make that distinction.
Well, it's beautiful. I love it.
Thank you.
Good evening, Miss Sandy. How are you?
I am a little congested, but I believe I'm understandable. And I called in for the very reason that if anybody who's listening who doesn't believe in anything other than what you can physically see, there are many things that are real we cannot see. And just as a quick example, I stayed in a haunted house. My daughter didn't know it was haunted when she rented it. Okay, I went up to Vermont, Putney, Vermont, to watch my grandchildren while my daughter was in Sheriff's Academy, okay? She was in Police Academy for 7 weeks, okay? I stayed in this house she had just rented. My granddaughter, Amity, and I, who were alone in this house, we were terrified. I would be awakened in the middle of the night. I would hear horrible sounds from the basement. It was awful, and having been brought up in the South as a Christian, the only thing I knew how to do was in the name of Jesus Christ. I call down holy angels around us, protect us. And that did, there is power in that, and that did push back whatever it was. And whether my daughter, who is the sheriff of Putney, Vermont, whether or not she believed me, I couldn't tell for sure. But she called me right after I got back here to California, and she says, "Mother, we had to move out of that. I had to move out of that house." And she told me about her cat coming up from the basement bloody, and how she was hiding under the covers with her gun drawn with something that you couldn't even see, running up and down the halls. And anyway, she moved out of that house with the flu around right before Christmas, you know, took down the tree and everything, moved out. And then she investigated it, and there was a woman and a child murdered, her daughter murdered in that very basement. So I'm here to tell you that entities, both heavenly, who can help you survive if 1,000 come against you with the knives and guns and everything else, they can protect you and you can survive, heavenly beings. And there are all, there's also the dark side. So I appreciate you, kind sir, for being on this show and telling us about these things and how we can stand against them. And I commend you for your work with autistic children.
Well, aren't you sweet? And I thank you for your comments, and I thank you for illuminating the truth about your own experience. Sandy, I have found in my work that your experience, as terrifying as I'm sure it was, is also typical of a standard haunting and the symptoms of such. I have also found that as much as I hear what you're saying about the mother and child having been murdered in the household, I don't, I'm not sure that that's what you were experiencing, only because I feel that it was the residual evil of the impulse that led to the murders. And it's very common for that negative energy to gravitate to a basement, because that's the lowest, deepest, darkest part of a dwelling where little to no light gets in. And light is what illuminates the truth. And that's what you were doing. So I'm so grateful that you knew what to do. You did it. You handled it appropriately and to the best of your ability. And I'm glad that you survived to tell about it.
Thank you very much. And like I will say this, and then I want to just simply get back to listening, because you're so very interesting. What you went through, kind sir, it developed such a deep caring for other people that it helps you to be stronger. That situation, having come through, and just having come through almost a little over a decade where I spent as an atheist, and I was just coming back from that actually was the most horrifying period of my life, the 7 straight weeks of living in that. But it brought me away much stronger spiritually and helped me realize that that we all have power to call down the heavenly influences around us too. And thank you again, sir. I'm going to go back to listening to you now.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Beautiful. God bless you. And, you know, no coincidences. So talk about trial by fire to bring you back to reconnecting with the source. But God bless you for it.
Thank you, sir. God bless you. Talk to y'all later. Bye-bye.
Okay. One question I have is medicine and autism. Do you find that children that have any different approach to life, especially in the learning field, tend to get drugged a lot, Bill?
Oh, heavens, yes. Oh, my Lord. And my mantra has always been that you don't medicate autism. You don't medicate a natural experience. What you might investigate and research medicating would be the adjunct or residual effects of the anxiety or the depression or the post-traumatic stress disorder, but I am also strongly encouraging of people to, in tandem with that, look at other holistic ways of supporting what people are experiencing through natural remedies, through supplements, through creating as tranquil a home environment as possible, through empowering people with self-advocacy to speak up for their own needs, and to, you know, look at all the things that everybody else would do to quell, calm, and soothe that would be holistic, like, you know, diet, exercise, meditation, proper rest, and nutrition, and so on.
I've also would imagine that children that are highly sensitive would have to have a very, very excellent diet that doesn't have the dyes in it and doesn't have the wheat in it, too much sugar. I mean, I would imagine all children shouldn't have all that, but I would imagine right. They would be even more sensitive. Now, I know that, I mean, I just have seen, so, you know, like, see, when my daughter was in kindergarten, the teacher came to me and said, your daughter's autistic. And I said, well, oh, okay. You know, why do you say that? And they said, because she doesn't fit the norm in the classroom. She doesn't learn the way everybody else learns. And I said, Well, okay. So do you find that other children, if they're not, whether they're labeled or not, do you find that children that don't learn the traditional left-brained way get labeled this way sometimes?
Yeah, I think there is a tendency to want to diagnose and label. And that may, part of that is not such a bad thing, because if there is truly an issue that could be supported through early intervention, then let's try to address that as soon as possible and get people and their families the resources that are available to them. But I also think that the label then can lead to stereotypes that set in motion a vicious cycle that gets perpetuated by people's misinterpretations and misunderstandings. So it's a dual-edged sword, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I personally do not think
in ways that are typical, and I don't think I was a terribly effective or efficient student, because I think in pictures and movies and phrases, I think in constant streams of visual imagery.
Oh, that's interesting. You see, I mean, the reason why you say that, when you say that, it sets something up, because when my daughter's from Russia, and she, you know, had a birth mother that was not well, you know, nourishing to her little body. And when she did her testing, when she finally went to a regular school one year, it was interesting because they said neurologically she doesn't connect and she sees things differently as well. Like if for instance, and I want you to see if this makes any sense, Bill, what I'm saying, because this may mean something to someone listening. If she were to see an apple, like in a regular classroom, someone puts up an apple, right, Bill? And they'll say, what is this, students? And everybody raises their hand and says, apple. It's an apple. Well, my daughter would not do that. She would look at it. She'd know it's an apple. But she would look at it maybe for 10 minutes and analyze the apple and look at it. Her filtering system is extremely different than the average kid that would just say apple. So 10 minutes later, the teacher might say to her, well, you know, student, did you know that that was an apple? And she looks at him like, well, of course I know it's an apple. But, it, you know, I had to go through, well, it's round. Well, let's look at this apple. So I don't know if that, does that make sense what I'm saying?
It does make sense in that we, when I say we, I mean my compatriots on the autism spectrum, we tend to be the detail people. So I would know that it was an apple, but I would also be more distracted by looking at the reflection of the window on the peel of the apple than the apple itself.
Okay. So then you might be the very student, if you did that, that would be labeled ADHD and be put on drugs.
Conceivably.
Yeah. Because you're distracted by something other than just looking at the apple And so there may be a lot of kids out there that, well, we already know that, that are, right. are different learners and all that. Now, I am very interested. I have so many. You're a wonderful guest. And by the way, you're gorgeous, too. I have your picture. And I mean, I'm older than dirt, so I can say that. But you're quite a handsome young person. So,
well, I'm actually in my 50s, my dear.
Oh, I did not know that. You look like you're like 25. I thought you were 25.
Oh, my goodness. No. I've been around for a while. And that's a recent picture, too.
Very young.
Thank you. You know, maybe we don't age as in the same ways that other people do. I don't know.
I know, but I said, oh my God, he's like my son's age or something, you know?
No.
That's amazing. Well, I'm fascinated too by, I'm also a psychic medium. And tell me what you, when you say you're a psychic medium, are you able to receive information from the other side to share with others, or do you just
absolutely? Absolutely. And I think that being on the autism spectrum gives me perhaps a little bit of an advantage over the average person for two reasons. First, because I have such a heightened overall nervous system. My senses and my emotions are buzzing and vibrating at such a high frequency to begin with. That aspect of my personhood wasn't something that I had to develop. It was already there. I'm already an empath. And the other thing is just what I said a moment ago, which is that I think in constant streams of visual imagery, pictures, movies, phrases, and so that's how, you know, spirit communicates to me, is largely through visuals. So it's an iconography that I've become reasonably adept in translating as an interpreter on behalf of what is being fed to me. It's like watching the news ticker at the bottom of CNN. And then they will also make me feel things, and they'll make me smell and taste things as well.
When you have that ability, and that's a beautiful ability, by the way, are you able to watch the news? I mean, I know that you've got a lot of discernment and you've got a lot of protections, but when you hear the news and situations that you personally can't control, how do you handle that? I mean,
I don't think I handle it well at all. The whole issue with those poor people in Syria being systematically starved to death, I've been ruminating on it for days now, and it is just agonizing to me. I said a few moments ago, the world hurts. This is to what I was referring, situations like this. And, you know, I think that for the most part, I've had a pretty easy time of it compared to many, many other people. And I just can't bear it. If I have any say about it, I don't know that I want to come back around as human again, because I think it is just so hard for so many people and it's unbearable.
Well, that brings up a subject when you talk about not coming back as human. I have a very, very strong connection with animals, and I know that you do also, and you talk about that. I think you have a book on that. What's the name of your book? I'm looking for it right now.
Conversations with Dogs.
Yes. Oh, gosh, what a great book. I mean, how more simplistic can you get? How fabulous. Talk to us about the book. I want to hear about some of your thoughts, because I wasn't able to get the book before the show. And
yeah, well, the interesting thing that I discovered in communicating with animals is that it works the same way it works with the spirit world or with other people. It's just a swapping of mental imagery. Because in my experience, animals, obviously, they don't think in terms of a language as we would know it. They think in terms of impulses that we might correlate with feelings, but they also think in terms of images. And so once I got the hang of understanding that, then I was able to just give and receive images from them. And, you know, oftentimes then that gets validated by the owner.
Mm-hmm.
Animals also, the curious thing, sorry for interrupting.
No.
This might be of interest to your listeners as well. They see the big picture. You know, like the child with autism who doesn't speak and is in constantly in a state of meditation, like I was talking about earlier, so do animals live in silence. And so they are automatically connected to the source. They are constantly tapped into understanding the big picture, their roles. And anytime I have seen an animal that knew it was dying before anyone else knew, he or she has always shown me symbolically a gently, slowly setting sun in a gorgeous sky streaked with pinks and oranges to show me that they're in the process of fading out. But they don't think in terms of life and death, black and white. They think in terms of a continuous ongoing cycle of existence, which is why, you know, when a dog is about to be put down or they're in pain, they will still look up at us with those big brown eyes and wag their tail because they get it. They understand what's going on and where they're headed, and they're more concerned about trying to comfort us.
I know that. That's so true. That is so true, because when you take a, you know, your beloved pet to be put down, or because you know they're suffering and you know it's time, I hold them in my arms, as hard as it is for me, but they're fine. And you know what, Bill? I bet you have had this same experience. As soon as the dog crosses over, they come right back to you. And they're right there with you. And it's like, it was so funny. It's not funny. I didn't mean to say funny, but it's so beautiful because I used to do a little bit. And I don't see those images like you do. I want to start working on that. That's fascinating. I get the feeling. Mm-hmm. It's like a feeling mm-hmm. like when my dog is thirsty, I immediately say, Lakshmi, you're thirsty. And then she'll lick my hand. And then I really know she's thirsty. That's how she lets me know. She licks my hand. But it's fascinating because they'll come right back home and they're in the car with us. And they're like, thank you. I'm right here. You know, and I've tried to explain that to the vet, but I don't think he gets it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that happens with people sometimes, too.
Well, of course. Oh, yes. Most definitely. I mean, when my father passed away, he lived on and had a house on the bayou. And when he passed away, he came back and we saw him outside fishing. Guess that's what he loved to do. Only for a couple of days. And then he went on. And most of the dogs that we have, though, I have to tell you, and you'll love this. We have little stuffed animals for every dog that has crossed over. We don't have that many, but we have lots of stuffed animals in the house, but they're mostly teddy bears and stuff. But we have a little pet for each little puppy that we've ever had. And we have three or four of them. And we have a big, big Goldie that we adopted when she was like 12 years old. We have a big Goldie stuffed animal. And you know, we just keep them with us and we let them kind of occupy that. Sandy's back online one again.
God bless her.
Sandy.
But you said about dogs knowing where they're going. They are so much more aware, as you know, and I just want to testify to the listeners. When we had to put our blind, very old dog that quit being able to even be able to walk, we had to put her down. We took her in, and my husband was on one side of her, and I was on the other. And she was his dog. She had known him years longer. And he said, I can't do this. I've got to go. And I said, well, I'm staying with her. And she went from looking at him with her big brown eyes to putting her eyes on me. And she was wagging her tail, just like you said. And anyway, it just brought back that memory, and I'm crying tears of joy because now I know she knew where she was going. And now I'm really going to shut up and listen to you. Thank you. Bye.
God bless you. Yeah, no, she knew exactly where she was going. Trust me. They know. They have such a greater understanding because, as I said, they live in silence. They're constantly connected with the source. They're being supported. They're being mentored. They're being counseled. They understand their roles in the family, whether it's the protector or the comedian or the healer or the nurse. They understand.
Well, you have some wonderful books. Share the name of this book again and how everyone can buy this, because I think this sounds fabulous.
The book about the dogs is called Conversations with Dogs. It's available on Amazon.com, or people can go to my website, williamstillman.com, and read more about it if they wish. And they can also find out about any of the other books that I've written there, too.
How do you go about your books, Bill? Do you just sit down one day and it just all comes flowing in?
It's interesting that you say that. First of all, I am not terribly physically coordinated, so I type with one finger only. But I'm a fast hunt and pecker. And I feel divinely inspired to communicate what I write. And there are many times where I will go back and read something that I've written and think that it's pretty profound. And I know that I didn't write it myself, that it didn't come from me. It came through me.
I understand that, because I've written a couple of books and I don't remember anything I put in the book. I don't even know if it's good or not, and I really don't care. It just came through me, it came to me, and I write it down. And I know that it probably could be better written, et cetera, but I just it flows in and I write it down and that's it.
Yes, I understand that.
Yeah, I haven't had time to write because I'm a lawyer. And I do a lot of work. I used to do a lot of work with children. And that's why I was so fascinated when I saw your bio, because I worked with a lot of children, of all kinds of children, you know, just all kinds. And so many of them were drugged. I want to share something with you, Bill, because I don't know that this is autism, but I tell you, we hosted a child, a 17-year-old child, and she was a child, from Latvia for Christmas. This just a couple of weeks ago. And she came over, and I don't know that she had autism, but she was, they called her retarded. I guess that's the word they used. I don't know what that means in Latvian terms, but that's what they called her. And she was on Prozac kind of medicine, and she had been in a psych hospital. Of course, they didn't tell me all this when we hosted her. So, you know, I was quite taken back when she got here, sweetest girl in the whole wide world. But, you know, why would they put a child like that? I mean, I know that you're not a doctor, but is that something that they would do to a child like with autism? Would they possibly put them on Prozac type of medicine?
Sure. Prozac or Ritalin or, you know, cocktails, pharmaceutical cocktails of many different variety. That's been an ongoing battle in the field among advocates and self-advocates. You know, people try to suppress and medicate what they don't understand. And I have never thought in terms of behaviors. I've always thought in terms of attempts to communicate that which is not readily understood. People who can't communicate in ways that are effective, reliable, or universally understandable are virtually trapped in a Twilight Zone version of charades all day, every day. So when you don't presume the intellect of that person, then you're not interpreting the behavior correctly as attempts to communicate.
Well, this child, I mean, and the reason why I call her a child, I understand she was 17, almost 18, but she acted like about a five-year-old. I mean, she had no ability to groom herself, brush her teeth, you know, any of that. It was quite amazing to see, because you're seeing this grown person that didn't have it. But according to the doctor, I took her to my doctor, who's an international doctor, and he told me that they were giving her Prozac and sleeping pills and whatever they want to call them. They call them sleeping pills. He said it was Prozac. I don't know what Prozac does. But they were giving her this when she went to bed and then all during the day. So she was so lethargic.
I think that's so dangerous, especially because young brains and young bodies are still developing. We don't have a lot of solid, peer-reviewed information about the side effects in child and adolescent bodies of a lot of these medications. And I just think, you know, long term, we just don't know how that's going to affect people's physiology.
Well, of course, you know, everything that she came over with was written in Latvian. So I you know, I didn't know what it was until I took all of it to the doctor. And I had no control over it anyway, Bill. I was not in a position to take her off. You don't take someone off of medicine. I mean, that can cause...
That can make it worse. Yeah.
Oh, yes. So, you know, we had no choice but to keep her on it. But it was a eye-opener because they just looked to me like... In my own perceptions, I mean, in my intuition, that they were just trying to drug her away. Just right. Keep her quiet and drug her away. And
right.
Whether she was autistic or retarded or slow developmentally, whatever you want to, I don't know what the term for that country, you know, I don't know how they term it. But it was quite an experience because it was something that, you know, first off, it wasn't told to us, so I didn't know. So, you know, it was a little harder to deal with when you don't aren't advised of that up front. So it was fascinating. Now, I want to get back to the dogs again. Do you own a dog?
I don't presently, but I have owned dogs, yes. But I also meet plenty of dogs in my neighborhood on my walks.
Well, I was going to say you'd be the perfect person to have a lot of dogs because they would love you. They would be like, somebody can talk to us. That's fabulous. Yeah. Do they all come to see you when you go outside in your neighborhood?
Oftentimes, but you know, dogs are a lot like people. Some of them are nice and some of them are not so nice and they can't be bothered. So, you know, they're not all universally loving and open and accepting. But, you know, sometimes I've had to wear them down. And once they realize that I'm credible and authentic, then they'll start to open up. I find that a lot with the toy breeds. So I think that most little dogs are divas, quite frankly. And they have no concept of their size. And so they, you know, they really assert themselves and boss people around and boss around bigger dogs, much bigger than they are as well.
I understand. I have two little dogs. And when someone comes to the car that I'm in, that they're in, I mean, you might as well, it might as well be a German Shepherd.
Right.
I mean, she sits up on her hind legs and they just walk away from the car.
Yeah. They're funny. But once they deem me worthy, then they start to open up a little bit.
Well, it just seems like you'd have such fun being I'm amazed though that you did. Now, when you get these pictures, I'm still on to that because that is so incredible. Is there any way you can teach people that, or is that just something that's yours and that's it? I mean,
well, I do teach a class on developing your personal intuition, but I think the thing to bear in mind is also that the great thing about being human is that my spiritual gifts and talents are going to manifest differently than your spiritual gifts and talents will, because it's being filtered through this channel that is uniquely Vicky and not Bill. And so, you know, you talked about being more predisposed to feeling something, which is clairsentience, yes, as opposed to clairvoyance, which would be receiving visuals. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's the wonderful thing, is that our spiritual gifts and talents are going to be as unique as our DNA, because it is being filtered through your DNA, every cell of what you are. And so there's going to be combinations of gifts. And, you know, you might be stronger in one domain than another, or you might want to put time and effort into developing maybe one of the dormant domains. And that's great, too.
So when you work with say the children, okay, when you work with a group of teenagers or children or adults, do you help them to see their talents and then help them maybe work on the dormants? Or I mean, how do you do your workshops with kids?
Okay, well, if we're talking about autism, my position is that 90% of my work has absolutely nothing to do with the person on the autism spectrum. It has everything to do with my aspiring to be an agent of change to create a transformation in and among everyone around that person. That's the work. and it's hard work, and sometimes it doesn't work because not everybody is open to dismantling old ways of thinking and old paradigms, because it means that you have to confront the three most powerful words any of us can say about ourselves: I was wrong. And not everybody is in a position to reflect back on their relationships, the way that they've interacted with the individual, what they've been taught and trained and led to believe is true of them. And so that's the part that doesn't work. So my work is really not directly with those people, but rather their families, their therapists, and their educators.
Okay, I see how you work that. Now, you're in the Pennsylvania area. Y'all have snow up there yet?
We have not. We've had, I shouldn't say that. We had a brief dusting the other day, but we've been very lucky so far this year.
Now, when you're doing work in Pennsylvania, I was noticing that you travel a lot. Do you still travel a lot to go to different groups?
Very little. I've been in the field of serving people with different ways of being, including autism, for almost 30 years now. This is my 29th year. And I am transitioning out of it almost completely in favor of doing the psychic medium work.
Oh, okay.
So I've been very selective about where I go and what it is that I'll do.
Now,
I have traveled all over the country in the past.
Do you still work with helping the police and others with missing folks? Do you still do that type of work?
And unsolved homicides, yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's got to be a very unique situation. I also have a friend from Louisiana that does that, helps the police with unsolved mysteries, I guess you would call it. So,
yeah. Well, in fact, I think one of the last times I was contacted by someone in law enforcement, it was in Louisiana.
They must be more open to that then. You know, I'm going to just make my own statement on this. I think that a lot of police departments use intuitives and just don't mention it because so many, they'd probably get so much criticisms for that. But I am very amazed at that, because when you work with doing your psychic work, do you kind of use discernment on who you work with? I mean, you don't just take callers from people wanting to know what their husbands are doing and all that. You don't take that kind, do you?
Well, no, it has to come through law enforcement in order for me to consider it as something that's, you know, legitimate. And I also do investigative work for a paranormal association as well, around, you know, discerning hauntings or helping people to feel empowered to reclaim their living environments. But the work around the missing persons and the unsolved homicides is really challenging, because you're attempting to connect with the soul energy of someone who has presumably passed on and is deceased, and finding and recovering their physical remains is not their priority, because where they are, it's inconsequential. They're relieved to be free of the burden of the physical body. And so I have to try to appeal to their sense of compassion for closure for their family and get information that way.
So basically, when someone has had a violent passing, then they're going to still remain very close to the area. I mean, they're not going to they're not going to go through the levels, as the easiest way for me to explain it, as they, you know, go through the ascension. They're going to stay close until it gets resolved, correct?
No, I don't believe that to be true.
You don't.
No, I don't. That's not been my experience, I should say.
Okay.
Unless they have not released completely to transition to what I call the heavenly realm. And so our listeners would probably be most familiar with the term ghost, as a way of describing that sort of earthbound sensation. Mm-hmm. And I've got plenty of experience with those folks as well.
Well, I mean, so, it is different. It's very different. That's why I wanted to.
It is very different. It is 1 degree shy of being human. Mm-hmm. That's how close it is. And so, you know, I've helped those folks to transition properly as well. But no, I was talking about trying to appeal to the compassion of the souls that are where they are intended to be in the heavenly realm. Yeah. Sorry for the confusion.
Now I understand. Because I know someone passed away 3 or 4 years ago in a car wreck close to where I live. Mm-hmm. And one of the family members asked me to find out what had happened. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, this soul had moved on. I mean, there was, I won't go into it, but it was more for the family than it was for him. You know,
right.
he had moved on. He was content.
Right.
But they weren't. So it was not as easy to get the information, at least for me, it wasn't, as they had wanted, because it really wasn't anything new. I mean,
if we have a couple moments, I'll tell you a real quick story.
Oh, please. Yes.
That's kind of in keeping with that. I had been scheduled to do an in-person interview at a radio station in rural western Pennsylvania. And I was told prior to the interview that the radio station was quote unquote haunted, and there were, you know, doors opening and closing and banging noises and so on. And so for 2 nights before the interview, I had a dream in which I was in a car that flipped over and was filling up with water. And so when I got there, I said to the guys, you know, this has been what I've been experiencing, and do you think it pertains to what's going on here? And one of the fellows said, that actually happened to someone in my family, and it happened not far from here. And so my take on it was that it was the female passenger who drowned, obviously, but was, you know, if something like that happened to you and you had concerns for your children or you wanted to get the word out, wouldn't you go to the closest place or try to get to the folks who tell the news? And that's what she was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Get to the folks who could tell the news. And I assured her mentally, of course, I was having this dialogue. I assured her I was aware of the situation, that her children were fine, and that she could release. And I followed up with them, and they said that all of the activity had stopped.
Oh, good. Yes. See, so how much helpful you're just so helpful. And I think that's what's so wonderful about folks using your service. And I know that we're going to have to end very shortly here, Bill, but I want you to tell people how to reach you. I know it's williamstillman.com, but any
yes,
other
ma'am.
Way you would like for people to be able to contact you?
Yes. Well, there is a way for people to contact me through the website, williamstillman.com. And if I may, I'd also like to make a pitch for clicking on the Facebook icon in the upper left corner of the homepage, because in my prayers and my meditations every day, I receive from the source 2 to 5 original inspirational quotes every day. I have well over 700 of them now. And every morning, I send one of them to the person who manages my Facebook page, Sharon, and she always finds the most amazing image to complement the quote. And I've been doing this for a year and a half now.
Awesome. Well,
and I think it might be a nice way for people to have a little something to reflect on for the day.
That is beautiful. Well, you have been a wonderful guest. You are full of fabulous wisdom, and I love having you on the show. And I hope that if for those that did miss the show, that did not get to hear it, by the way, Bill, it goes into our archives and stays there for years, so people will always be able to come back and listen. So I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being the autism whisperer and psychic visionary that you are, and thank you for being on Living Your Soul's Journey tonight. Thank you so much.
You're very sweet, and I enjoyed every moment of our conversation, and I thank you for having me as a guest.
Well, thank you very much, and I want to thank everyone for listening to Living Your Soul's Journey with Dr. Vicki this week. I will be back next week, 4 o'clock Pacific, 7 o'clock Eastern, and remember this week to find something to be in gratitude about. Always be in gratitude. So thank you again. Mr. William Stillman, and good night to everyone.